Welcome to The Investing Show. I'm Simon Lambert of This Is Money. Joining us on today's show, we've got Stephen Yu of Blue Whale Growth Fund, a fund that invests around the world, holds what it considers to be 30 of the best companies, and has done pretty well for its investors since it started out. We're going to be talking to Stephen about how the fund invests, what 2019 was like for investors, and also how they decide to cut the companies that aren't delivered the goods. Stephen, welcome to the show. And joining me, as ever, as well, our regular guest, Richard Hunter of Interactive Investor.
Hello, Simon.
Stephen, you were on the show this time last year when you told us a little bit about how Blue Whale works, how you invest, what your ideas are. As I said before, you've been doing very well for investors. I think you're the second best performing fund in your sector since your inception. How has the portfolio fared in 2019?
So, thank you, Simon. Thank you for having me here. So in 2019, we have a very different set of market conditions compared to 2018. So this year, we have managed to outperform the market by over 5%. We are sitting in the top quartile of best performing fund in the sector. And I think if you really look into the nitty gritty of how the market behaved this year, I think there's been some tricky moments, especially over the last probably two to three months. And the stocks that we have invested into, they have demonstrated a lot of resilience. So they managed to recover a lot of lost performance, and I think we're quite happy with the performance this year.
What are the companies that have done best for you?
So we, within the portfolio, we have quite a big theme, which are related to digital transformation, and I can expand onto that a bit later. If you really go into where we sit in the market today or the economy today, that there has been a lot of digitization, transformation across both consumer-facing business and also enterprises. And if your company that you invest into are exposed to this segment, that you are capturing the structural growth which would last multiple years going forward, and they are very resilient in general. Also, if you look at all the macro uncertainties, which is probably maybe on the back of the mind of investors, to be able to get into companies that are not exposed to those uncertainty would help a lot. And you can also get certainty that they will be able to deliver to the expectations and continue to grow.
And so you invest in what you consider to be the world's best companies. You hold a relatively small portfolio of 30 different companies. How do you define those world's best companies? What is it that the Blue Whale Growth Fund looks for when it's going, right, is this a company we want to invest in?
So we do set a very high bar in terms of how we define a high quality business, and a couple of factors that we look at. One would be definitely you want to invest in a company that the business model is sustainable, that is not being disrupted by some sort of challenges. And then secondly, they do need to have a very good management team. Thirdly, we probably want them to have a very strong balance sheet. So majority of our stocks in the fund on an aggregated basis, they're actually net cash, so that we are not geared in terms of on a financial side. And then we also like companies that are exposed to some sort of structural growth drivers, so they can continue to grow despite what's happening in the world out there. If you put all of this together, we have managed to shortlist about 100 companies in our universe, and at any one point in time, we will try to pick the best 30, considering taking into account valuation, which is the other very important factor if you want to deliver outperformance.
Just in terms of your performance from inception has been spectacular. No question about that whatsoever. In terms of your peers, as you're looking around, perhaps there's maybe one fund which is sort of giving you a run for your money. What's the kind of similarities or differences between the two funds? And just out of interest, what sort of thing is that other fund investing in?
Yeah, so within my sector, the IA Global, there are 300 funds.
Yep.
So I think we are now sitting in the number two position. And then the direct competitor that we compete against, which also run highly concentrated fund, I think is, I'm happy to say that we have now done better than them. But the fund who is still ahead of us, which we are, as of today, we are less than 1% behind them. They do very different things. So they invest into mid to small cap and also they are probably very exposed to the healthcare or medtech sector, which we are not. And I think for any short period of time, you would expect that there might be some fund who are more maybe specialists or focused in some sectors, and they could do well.
Sure.
So we want to, it's still part of our objective that we want to be the number one best performing fund for investors in the global space, and hopefully maybe this time next year that we could say that.
Yeah. Actually, that's an interesting element, because when we talk about fund performance, we'll talk about over 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, we might even go to 10 years. But we'll also talk about calendar year performance as well, which is really a completely artificial construct, isn't it, in the middle of a fund's performance. But you've got to choose something. So when we spoke to you this time last year, you were the second best performing fund in the sector, you beating the market then. But that was a much tougher year for investors than this year has turned out to be, despite all the doom and gloom at the start of this year. This has actually been a much better year for investors. You've still beaten the market. I think you were up 28%, the fact sheet I looked at. But you've slipped a little bit further down the rankings in terms of solely this year. What's changed that's made it that, you know, there's a few more ahead of you this year? Is it just the conditions? Is it just because the market has been on a really strong run?
I think there are two reasons to that. I think in 2018, we managed to deliver a positive return of about 8.5% versus the market, which was down 3%, and our peer group was down 6% last year. I think what we set out to do is really to invest into high quality businesses at an attractive valuation. And I think we have delivered to the expectation that we can still deliver positive return in a negative market conditions. This year, the market has been quite strong, as we know. I think if you look at the MSCI World, it's up over like 20%. A lot of US indices have up quite a lot as well. And I would probably attribute that to, it's a bit easier to make money this year. I think if you probably could be less cautious to start with, that if everything is going up, then it's easier just to invest in things that even though they might not be high quality businesses. And then secondly, we do have a very strict discipline on valuation. So it's not just identifying the high quality businesses, but in order to generate outperformance, we need to buy them at the right price and also continue to hold them as far as the valuation remain attractive. And a lot of the companies that we look at or follow or in the fund this year, we felt that the valuation are no longer attractive. So on an average, if you average out for the year, that we have been holding about 10 to 15% cash. So if with perfect hindsight, that if we were fully invested in the fund, then we would be in the top 10 position. But of course, that is not part of the game. I mean, we do focus on the downside. We do want to protect investors. So hopefully in time that this strategy would work out, that we will continue to churn out our performance. I think that's the objective.
Presumably, as a fund manager, that is something that you have to be careful of, especially if you're a fund manager who in their first year of running the fund, ends up near the top of the tree. That obviously, and I don't expect you to answer this question, I'm going to hazard a guess that most fund managers would definitely like to be in the top 10 performing funds for their sector. But you don't want to just go all guns blazing for that if that means chucking your investment philosophy out of the window. And if your investment philosophy is to deliver a market-beating return, deliver a return that beats, you know, most of the other funds in the sector, but also holds a bunch of quality companies, reevaluates them and gets rid of them when they don't meet that bar any further, then you have to stick to that approach, regardless of whether it means you're number 30 or number 2 or number 1.
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing about your analogy is that in our industry, the most important thing that we focus on from Blue Whale perspective is consistency of outperformance. So there's many ways to cut how you measure the value that we deliver for our investors. One way that we actually do it internally is, and also I think some data provider, they do it as well, is you look at the annualized return when we first started. So let's say if you have invested the fund since we started, hold it for 12 months, and then you compare our performance versus the market or our peer group, and then you bought our fund, let's say this time last year, and then you look at the annual performance that we have delivered over the last 12 months. If you plot that chart out since we started for every 12 months that we have delivered consistent outperformance for any 12-month period. So surely that this year, on a calendar year basis, that we are not in the top 10, but we have beaten the market by over 5%, which is, if we can continue to do that, I think you could expect that we will probably be leading the competition in time. So I think it's the consistency that what we don't want to do is we deliver a very good year of return in 2018, and then we don't do as well this year. And then you kind of average out. So you do very well in 1 year, you didn't do well this year, you do well again. That's not what we set out to do. So in terms of the portfolio that we, the companies that we focus on how we run the portfolio, we do look forward for the next 18 to 24 months. So a lot of company that when we say we felt that the valuation might be a bit stretched and less undervalued now compared to before, we do want to replace them with something that we feel are equally high quality business, but trading at a more attractive price. So if we invest into them today, over the next 18 to 24 months, we feel that they could deliver the outperformance. So that is what we set out to do.
There's an old investment adage that now is always the most difficult time to invest because of all the noise that's going on at any given time, particularly for retail investors. But perhaps what's less reported is that it's arguably even more difficult when to decide to sell a share, particularly if it's done well for you. So have you come across that situation where you've had to sell any shares within your portfolio?
Yeah, so we have one stock, which I did share with our audience this time last year, that we had a top 10 holding in Adidas. And Adidas has been a top 10 holding since we started the fund. And we sold out of Adidas in August this year completely, so we no longer hold Adidas. If you look at just in a very simplistic sense in terms of the share price movement year to date. So Adidas was up about 50% year to date. We've done well out of that, on the back of that. But if you look at the contribution to that share price movement, 40% out of 50, so 40 absolute slash 50, was due to re-rating. So Adidas now trading more 40% more expensive compared to a year ago. And also at the same time that the earnings revision, which is the 10% out of 50, was down to fundamentals. So if we continue to hold Adidas now, then we are holding onto Adidas 40% more expensive than before, which was not due to fundamentals or earnings revisions. And if I give you another example, which are still a top 10 holding, is Adobe. So we really like Adobe as a creative, as a digital content creator, a piece of software. Adobe has been a top 10 holding since we started. And if you look at the share price performance, it's delivered over 100%. So throughout the entire 2 years that we have Adobe as a top 10, about 5% position in the fund, it's delivered 100%. And then doing the same analysis as Adidas, all out of the 100%, 85% of that was driven by earnings revisions. So the company, not only that the company grow or expected to grow, continue to grow, at the same time that the market has been too conservative in terms of the EPS that they originally forecasted. So Adobe is now only about maybe 15% more expensive compared to 2 years ago. And of course, if you take into account the market premium, how the market how well the market has done this year, 15% more expensive over 2 years, I think is acceptable. So I think that is something that we do focus on a lot, and we would want to have our portfolio invested into a company that are not only high quality but also the price is attractive. But I think we are at the mercy of the market that sometimes the market doesn't do that, so we will end up selling position that we still like them, but they are no longer attractive in price.
In terms of the companies that you hold, when you look at a sort of x-ray of the portfolio, a simple x-ray of the portfolio, it shows up a lot of tech in there. Are all of those companies that you hold all the same, all those tech companies the same? And also, how recession-proof are those companies as well?
That's a great question. If you refer to our fact sheet, that you will see that we have about 45% in technology, and typically how that is defined is under the GICS definition. We don't actually agree with that. I think it's too overly simplistic in terms of that definition, because if we really go through the entirely the X-ray version of the portfolio, that we have like sub 10 different themes, sub-themes within the technology space. And we are invested into digital payments, digital content creation, digital experience, the healthcare system of records, cloud, design software, which in the construction industry now there's a lot of digitization taking place. It's no longer like in the old days that you do it on a piece of paper in terms of drawing everything now is digitized. And there's a big trend to do that. And the interesting thing about our portfolio, which linked to your question on recession, is they are extremely resilient. Majority of those companies that are exposed to digital transformation, they're quite resilient to the macro uncertainties. So we would feel very comfortable if we, let's say we go into recession tomorrow, our company on a relative basis would do extremely well. And then secondly, within the tech space, I think in the market, there's a lot of article written about like WeWork recently, maybe Uber, etc. But we do not consider those companies as high quality because their business model in itself are a bit broken to start with, and their cash flow model is not sustainable, etc. And then also within the tech space, you do have the hardware companies that's selling piece of hardware rather than selling software, and that is dependent a lot on the capital expenditure by other companies, and which would be affected by macro. So I think we do have a big exposure to technology names, but I would suggest that part would be a subsegment of the big technology definition that you might see. So, and we are not in semiconductors neither, which we think is quite cynical in itself.
One name that stands out looking through your top 10, though, for a lot of sort of US tech-heavy companies that you're seeing, was Wyndham Hotels. Why that company?
So Wyndham Hotel is the smallest company in our portfolio. So the market cap is about $5 billion. The average market cap of other holdings are over $100 billion.
So they're dollars. Big, large
companies.
Yeah,
so they're
companies.
Really big. So Wyndham actually is at the other side of that spectrum. We also I think it's a good point that you bring this up, that we don't just invest into tech, we do look outside of tech. So about half of the fund would be technology related, but then the other half of the fund would be non-technology. And Wyndham is one of the largest franchise hotels, and most of the hotels are in the US. So the reason that we like Wyndham is because we do like the business model, which is a bit similar to our Domino Pizza here. So Wyndham in itself is really selling the systems, and then people would then invest the capital to build up a hotel, and then you leverage on the brand, which is Wyndham's, and they have multiple brands, and then they take a royalty out of that. So the business model in itself is quite high quality. They're not subjected to the big swing when you have less people staying in the hotel, etc. So that is something that we really like. And then secondly, the valuation is very attractive, I think, in based on our assumptions. It was actually a spin-off this time about 18 months ago. So it's not very well covered. It's a very high-quality business. The valuation itself is trading at quite a decent discount to the direct peers in the US. And I think you put all things together that we do like Wyndham.
Okay. Stephen, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. Richard, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you very much for watching. See you next time. Goodbye.